Today I'm going to present a real-time forest nutrient value and quality characterization in the field. The literature illustrates that remote sensing can be used to estimate forage mass and nutrient value. There is, however, limited published research on using multiple sensors as a system for height and accuracy in estimating forage mass and nutrient value. It's kind of one of the upsides of using remote sensing for forage biomass and nutrient value modeling is that it really reduces time investment needed for data collection. It also allows compilation of much more extensive data sets and ultimately can provide real-time outcomes for decision making. Now, one of the greatest caveats that we've encountered and that has been noted is that incorporating multiple sensors in a system, getting all of that data in, can become really data intensive and logistically difficult as far as post-processing goes. So as the mother of invention is necessity sort of thing goes along, at the Noble Foundation over the past couple of years, we've been working on a piece of software called AgriLogger to address this issue of that really data intensive nature of these remote sensing systems. The user interfaces for AgriLogger look something like this. Okay, they don't look something like this. They look like this. And what AgriLogger, it's a software application that runs on a PC, or we get it to run on like a Panasonic TouchTab or TouchPad. And what it does is it allows you to stream in a lot of data, different streams from different sensors simultaneously. It splices that data temporally. And obviously, then that makes it a lot easier for the post-processing and analysis of the data. We're in a beta testing of doing the model outcome calculations. You can see the dry weight, height, moisture, and protein. So those are actually calculations that it is making on the fly as you're taking data. And that's averaged on a biplot basis. So this software is really sort of the data portal that allows a sensor-based system to work well. Whoops. So the objective of this study was to incorporate multiple sensors into a system that produced a single data output file. And from that data, we want to produce models that allowed us to predict biomass and crude protein. So we executed the trials that were undertaken in this research at three locations: the Dupuy Farm north of Ardmore, the Red River Farm southwest of Ardmore, and the Unit 3 headquarters facility at the Noble Foundation headquarters in Ardmore, Oklahoma. It spanned three growing seasons that began in 2012, and we're actually still collecting some data. I collected data on Friday, as a matter of fact. It's comprised of, to this point, four forage species: alfalfa, Bermuda grass, wheat, and tall fescue. And incidentally, the alfalfa and Bermuda grass trials that have been included in this research have some monoculture aspects as well as some mixed species aspects to them. We used partial least squares regression with cross-validation for our modeling analysis and ultimately adopted a five-step modeling approach. Five-step modeling approach started off with evaluate the trends, look at the data, make sure we can identify some consistent trends within the data so that the data that's going to ultimately populate those models is going to be something that, you know, provides a useful outcome. You can see here you've got a nice consistent trend of the highest to the lowest crude protein, and that's a spectral signature there. Second, we want to choose the variables that we're going to populate those models with, and we do that by using variable importance plot scores. This is output from PLS and SAS, and it's a really nice tool that allows you to sort of whittle down what are the most contributive variables for that model. When it took those variables, populated that model, created that model in partial least squares regression, and then tweak that model a little bit, adjust that model to make sure that we could get the highest level of precision out of it. And then lastly, we want to look at validation and evaluation of the differences between the measured and the modeled values. And the data used to create the models was different than the data used to validate the models. So we have two different data sets, one we used to create a model, one we used to validate the model. So everything I've covered up to now is just sort of, conceptual, right? So we're going to go into some specifics now. The actual sensors we used to collect data consisted of a time-of-flight laser distance sensor, a 240 megahertz ultrasonic proximity sensor, a 120 megahertz ultrasonic proximity sensor, two green seekers, a 2 and a 4 band, a 15-channel crop scan passive radiometer, and then a hyperspectral JAS radiometer. Incidentally, the JAS is the only unit we did not use on a mobile platform, and that's the mobile platform. And you can see as well the GPS antenna on top there. We also collected spatial data along with all the other sensor data. To collect destructively measured harvest data, we used the Wintersteiger Cebus forage harvester. And for the nutritive value analysis, we used the NIR analysis. So results and discussion. So I'm going to go through several slides that look very much like this, and I'm going to spend a little extra time on this one, kind of explain it so we can get to the other ones. Initially, you can see at the top there, we have a scatter plot. That scatter plot is the sensor estimated biomass. It regressed with the destructively measured biomass. You can see there's a relationship. This one's for wheat biomass. The relationship there is characterized with an R-squared of 0.81. So that's not a bad relationship. The figure on the bottom there, this is a graphical representation of the mean estimates for the modeled data as well as the destructive data. Now there are 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 6 categories for wheat biomass, and I think there's 5 for some of the other ones. But those categories were created from the destructively measured biomass. Those categories are 1,000 kilogram per hectare increments. So those are biomass categories. And what we wanted to do here is we wanted to take the data that we had gotten for the destructively measured biomass, kind of group it in 1,000 kilogram per hectare increments, and compare the model data in those same 1,000 kilogram per hectare increments and just see how close we were going to get. And in a world where they agreed perfectly, all of those letters on top of those paired bars would be the same. Obviously, they're not the same. And you can see that where we picked up some loss of precision for wheat is on the highest biomass pair there for the 5 to 6,000 kilograms per hectare, as well as the 0 to 1,000 kilograms per hectare. And this is a kind of a common theme that we'll go back over in the next few slides. And in realizing that we had a loss of precision, that's sort of the limits of our range of our data, it prompted an investigation to make sure we could ground truth some of this data and make sure that the data we were getting from the sensors really correlated well with what we were seeing on the ground. And this is a 1100 plot wheat trial, and those dots represent biplot canopy height averages for each plot. And we can see here where it says blank plot, there's a little yellow dot there. That little yellow dot, well, it's a blank plot, and it's obviously where the sensors were picking up something that was very low there. So that's good. And we know that correlates well to what we're seeing in the field. As well as the pore stand, we know there was not much there, and so the sensor measurements correlate well to that as well. So we understand that we have a little loss of precision sort of at the tails of our data, but our sensors are picking up measurements that make sense with what we're seeing in the field. So it's probably possible to optimize those models a little bit and improve the precision of them. So this is the same type of a graphic for alfalfa biomass, and you can see the relationship there for the sensory estimate to the structurally measured is characterized with an R-squared of about 0.71. Once again, like I said before, you can see that our loss of precision chiefly resides in that highest biomass category of 4,000 to 5,000 kilograms per hectare, as well as the 0 to 1,000 kilogram per hectare category. I will say this, in all cases, the modeled estimates ordered the means in exactly the same order as did the destructive. So we're looking at, like I said, a loss of precision, not necessarily a loss of accuracy or a difference. For Bermuda grass biomass, sensor estimates to destructively measured R squared of 0.85 approximately. And actually here you can see that the highest biomass level, there's really not a great disparity between the modeled and the measured, so it did pretty good. But once again, we had a little loss of precision down there on the very low end for biomass. Tall fescue is very similar to the Bermuda grass on the top end there, but you can see as we go down, we actually picked up some variability there in the 2,000 to 3,000 kilogram per hectare category, and then once again lost a little precision at the 0 to 1,000 kilogram per hectare category. So let's move to the crude protein models. We looked at three hyperspectral crude protein models. This data was collected with the JAS unit. We selected the crude protein model with the highest explanation of variation-dependent variable. That model was an 11-band model with 10 nanometer wide bands. You can see an illustration of the differences on the bisample difference of the measured versus the modeled crude protein here. And for that JAS model, the relationship between the measured and the models was characterized as having an average error of 1.2 units of crude protein. Spectral band models, we used a crop scan passive radiometer to produce a spectral band model for Bermuda grass for crude protein. Once again, you can see this is an illustration of the measured to the modeled, and that relationship is characterized very nearly the same as having an average error of 1.19 units of crude protein error. So there's not much difference between the crop scan and the JAS model is the take home there. We also produced for Bermuda a crude protein estimation model using the 4-band Greenseeker, and actually this is a pretty nice model. The relationship between the measured and the modeled gave us an average error of only about 1 units of crude protein, so that was a little bit better. So, in conclusion, more than likely, modeling approaches can produce accurate estimation for forage biomass of crude protein, which could improve agronomic decision-making for producers and also ultimately probably be appropriate for research reporting and make all of our lives easier if anyone in here collects forage, because you could do it a lot faster with a lot less people. Also, we're probably looking at a situation where multiple sensors combined into a model is going to give you the most effective way to model vegetation characteristics. There's probably not a silver bullet sensor out there that's just sort of going to do everything for us. Now, future examinations and development, along these same lines, what we're going to look at is, like I've said several times, optimize those models, go ahead and improve, do what we can to improve the precision on the top and bottom end of those estimation ranges. Expand the number of species that we have examined, and where appropriate, add additional contributive sensors, so anything we can do to make those models more robust. With that, I'd like to thank Drs. Butler and then Toronte from the Noble Foundation for all their help and support to these projects, as well as Drs. Arnell, Ron, and Wong from Oklahoma State University and their efforts in collaboration. And I will take any questions.
You described having difficulties at both ends, and looking at what you presented, it looks like the measured is underestimating at the low end and the opposite relationship at the upper end.
Right. And I think what you're seeing is like, so if you have horrible data and you try to predict something, you can always predict the middle of it, right? So you have a big ball of data, you can predict the middle of it pretty easily. And so where you lose the precision is out towards the ends of that curve. And so we're having that curve sort of, I guess that relationship is being smoothed out a little bit, right? So it's pulling that bottom end up and it's pulling that top end down whenever it comes to that estimation.
It looks like you're having more trouble at the lower end. And when you presented the destructively sampled, my thought was, well, maybe you're just losing some, you're not actually getting the whole yield in that mechanical harvest, but it carried through to other measurements that explanation wouldn't work. So do you have any thoughts of what's going on there?
Well, I don't know what other...
Well, the crude protein wouldn't be this dry matter. You could explain it as you're losing something out in the field compared to your model.
Well, and I'm going to say on crude protein, it's sort of you get down to a certain level, and I'm guessing that straw being very low crude protein and straw that's even lower crude protein, you're going to have a hard time picking up the difference in grain there, right? And that's typically what we're doing is we're looking at the difference in grain. But as far as the biomass goes, you're exactly right. And that's – so I would have to sit up here and criticize the mechanics of a forage harvester, though, to really go down that road. And that's sort of considered the gold standard. So, you know, I'm not prepared to go there today.
But relative to that, if I may.
Yeah.
In those categories that you presented there, Josh.
Yeah.
The end in each of those is probably unequal. That is, you get to that far end, as I would notice. Really, there's nearly as many data points when you're comparing.
Right, you're absolutely right.
6,000 areas.
Yeah.
As you are down in, say, whatever, 2 to 3.
Yeah.
And so, to me, that maybe a better way to separate those data would be to sort of split those into, say, 5 even data sets across there, not worried about the exact 2 to 3,000 areas.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what I tend to present here is sort of how do I ensure that I do not look like we're biasing this towards the sensors in any way? You know, I mean, what's the worst possible scenario for failure for the sensors? And if we can overcome that, then, like you said, maybe a more appropriate distribution of that data and examination is appropriate. Yes, sir.
You said that it might be useful for producers. What's the relative cost of some of those sensors?
Okay. So if you wanted to be able to predict biomass on Bermuda grass, you would need to spend somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000 to rig up a sensor system. Now, that's assuming you have a computer, right? If you don't have a computer, go spend another $500 or $600, or better yet, go buy you a Surface Pro that's off of eBay that's been used for $200. And so really, you know, I mean, for less than a couple $1,000, probably less than $1,500, you could set up a system that's going to get you really close on biomass. As far as if you're looking at it, you know, management sort of an application.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Thank you.